Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson here with my co-host and our physician in residence, Dr. Meg Meeker. And today we have the privilege of talking with a 17-year-old who created a shocking documentary. Hannah Allison put together a 1.5-hour narrative that exposes how some doctors mistreat children with genetic abnormalities. It's disturbing to see how these children and their families are being treated, or, in a lot of cases, not being treated. Watching this was honestly infuriating and heartbreaking, but before we get into that, I'd like to tell you a little bit more about Hannah. Hannah Allison has been involved with both film and music for many years. She plays the fiddle and co-wrote the song Wonderfully Made, which is featured in the film. She's the oldest of 7 children, and 2 of her sisters have special needs. Her 10-year-old sister Abigail is actually one of the subjects in the film. Hannah's parents will be with us as well. Her mom, Dr. Don Allison, has a private practice specializing in skin cancer. And Hannah's dad, Rex Allison, previously worked as a teacher and school psychologist until their daughter Abigail was born. He was appointed in 2011 to serve as an advisor on the Oregon State Interagency Coordinating Council as a parent advocate for special needs children. Hannah's parents have been married for 24 years, and their family currently resides in Bend, Oregon. So here now is Dr. Meg Meeker and our guests, Hannah, Don, and Rex Allison, on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Well, I am very excited today to have in the studio the Allison family. We have Hannah, Rex, and Don, who are here to tell us about Abigail. Abigail is a very special little girl. She is Hannah's sister and the daughter of Rex and Don. Welcome to Family Talk today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. I thought what we would do, Don, is start with you. Your daughter, Hannah, who we're going to hear from in a minute, has overseen the production of a compelling documentary called Labeled. And I would love for all of our listeners to see Labeled. And I understand it's just recently been released. Is that true?
It is. It premiered March 14th at the Christian Worldview Film Festival in San Antonio, Texas.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Dawn, you are Hannah's mother, and you are also a physician. And so this has been quite a journey for you. Tell us how Labeled came to be. Was this your idea? Was this Hannah's idea? Can you tell us a little bit about your story as a family?
Well, we had had some disturbing incidents with our daughter, Abigail, and Abigail was our 5th child, and during my pregnancy with Abigail, she was measuring small for her gestational age. And mm-hmm. we got to the point about 6 weeks before her due date when the doctor felt it was important that she either be delivered a month prematurely or that we get an amniocentesis to try to define why she was so small. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we decided that an amniocentesis is the route we would go because it seemed to be in her best interest to find out if she needed to be born now mm-hmm. or if she needed to wait until she was term.
So, had you had ultrasounds all along the way during your pregnancy with her?
Yes, we had ultrasounds.
And everything looked normal?
And everything looked normal except that she was small.
Okay.
And at that point, we actually even were sent to a specialist and had more in-depth studies, but the amniocentesis was necessary to get the diagnosis.
Okay.
So we were told that she had Wolff-Hirschhorn syndrome, which is also known as 4p-, and that is when a piece of the 4th chromosome is missing. We got the diagnosis, and the first thing I did, being a doctor, was to look up the medical literature and see what was out there on this condition.
And had you heard of 4p- syndrome before? Or?
You know, I hadn't heard of that particular diagnosis. Okay. So we looked it up and we were actually encouraged because what we read was that children with this diagnosis were delayed. They were profoundly delayed, but they continued to make progress throughout their life.
Okay.
Shortly after that, we met with the doctor. We had one neonatologist at the time at our hospital, and we met with him and the obstetrician. And when they sat down to discuss the delivery, he told us that we needed to compact our parenting into a very short time because Abigail would die within the first 2 years of life.
Wow. What was that like when you heard that news?
It was actually very confusing because that's not what I had just read. And I actually didn't understand. But his advice was to call hospice and to take her home. He actually said, if she survives the birth, she's going to live a very short time. And my advice is to take her home and call hospice because she's going to die before she's two. And he said that it would ruin our family. It would ruin our marriage.
And she's child number five.
She's child number
five.
So
you had four other kids at home.
Yes. And he said that it was going to ruin our children's lives. And, you know, his advice was not to take her to the children's hospital, which is about 3.5 hours away for any kind of specialty care. And we really felt like we were on our own at that point.
Mm-hmm. Did your doctor at any point in that last month of your pregnancy advocate for you to have an abortion or just to, you know, bring the baby early and just let her die early?
He actually didn't advocate aborting her. We'd had that discussed with us by the social worker at the specialist's office in Eugene, Oregon, which is about 120 miles from our house. Mm-hmm. And she came into a room and talked to Don and I and said, you know, you don't have to parent this child. Mm-hmm. And Don and I just looked at each other and kind of like, we just looked at each other like, what are you saying? And she said, well, there are options. You don't have to parent this child.
Is this before Abigail's born or during your last month of pregnancy she said that to you?
This was in the last month of pregnancy.
Wow.
Right after we found out.
So you hear this bad news. You go home. The doctor's advice is very conflicting or conflicts what you've read. What did you do?
What I did anyway, I just started the study on the 40 Days of Purpose. That had just come out. Mm. And actually, the next study was on Psalm 139. And when I read that, I went, oh, okay, this is exactly what we're supposed to do. I mean, this child is coming to us in God's image, and we're the parents. And of course, we're going to parent this child. We didn't even have a thought of not parenting the child. So that's what we did is we basically said, we're going to get ready to have Abigail come into our life.
In fact, we were just one time after the next shocked at the things that we were hearing. You know, when Rex said, well, we're not going to have an abortion. Is that what you're asking us? And she said, well, there are other options. Most people would just give the child up to the state. And it was
And that's
just,
an obstetrician telling you that? A physician?
That's actually the social worker.
And that was the social worker who was there to help us understand what was going to happen with Abigail.
And I thought when we went in for this meeting that they insisted that we have, that it was to help us prepare, knowing some of the issues that she might have, that she might need to be hooked up with early intervention type services like physical therapy, things like that, that it was to help us.
So you were not prepared to hear, your daughter may not make it, we're not going to intervene. You were preparing for something very different.
Yes. That's I thought at that time that the purpose of social services was to help the family, to help the needs of the child when the child was born. But that's not what the meeting was about.
Right. And I, at the time, I was a school psychologist, so I was used to early intervention, early childhood special education. And I really thought that she was coming in to help connect us with services. And when she didn't indicate that, I said, this meeting is over. And we just went on because we knew that those were not options for us. They were never going to be options, and we didn't even want to talk about them.
So Abigail is born, and how did Abigail do in the first couple months of life?
She actually did well. She was 3 pounds, 11 ounces. Mm-hmm. She was in the neonatal intensive care unit for 21 days just to get large enough. They needed her to be 4 pounds to leave is what we were told. And so it was just until she was big enough that she could go home. There was very little that they actually did for her. There were no interventions that were necessary.
How were the doctors and nurses in the neonatal intensive care unit towards you and Abigail?
Well, the nurses were great. We had some nurses that we really felt were looking out for her best interest. As far as the doctor goes, we didn't realize at the time that he was not necessarily looking out for her best interest. He was my colleague. He was our neighbor. He lived a few houses down in our neighborhood. He was Catholic, and we were in a Catholic hospital. And it never crossed my mind that they weren't looking out for her best interest.
When you say that, what specifically do you mean? What was he doing that led you to believe he wasn't looking out for her interests? Were they withholding medications, withholding IV fluids, food, nutrition?
No, fortunately, Abigail didn't have any of those issues. She was eating okay. It's some of the events that happened afterwards that made us realize the situation that we were in. The only thing that I recall in the NICU was that he did want her to leave a little early, and I had remembered the conversation, she can't leave till she's 4 pounds. And when I brought that up, he said, okay, I guess we'll leave her in here longer. And so that was probably the first thing that I realized. There were also some instances when I asked for like a physical medicine and rehabilitation consult. She had some torticollis going on with her neck, and they would not.
They wouldn't see her.
Yeah.
They wouldn't put the consult through.
They wouldn't put the consult through. I actually saw the doctor at a choir concert a couple weeks later, and I'd ask about why they wouldn't come. And she said, we wanted to come, but we were told we couldn't.
So in those early months, was it your sense that while they weren't doing her harm, they just weren't advocating for her?
Yes.
Now, as she got older, things changed. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because her needs became greater as she got older. Yes.
For various reasons, we had a strong suspicion that she wasn't making enough growth hormone. And I had talked to a colleague at Ohio State in the Department of Endocrinology.
Where you'd gone to medical school, by the way.
Yes.
Yes.
From my medical school. And we discussed it with him. And he strongly recommended to us that we pursue this. And so I went to this pediatrician. He was the one in the practice who took care of children with needs such as Abigail. So the same doctor. And we asked if he would run a blood test to see if she was making enough growth hormone. And he said no. And we were a little
surprised. He said no, he would not run the test.
Yes,
correct?
He would not order the blood test. And okay. So Rex started calling pediatric endocrinologists, since that was their area, to see if somebody would evaluate her for this. Mm-hmm. Especially being told no by the local doctor, we wanted to call ahead and make sure that they would treat her like anybody else. Mm-hmm. And after the fourth doctor had said, no, I won't evaluate her for this, I said, let me call. Maybe they're not understanding. And so I called the doctor and I told her, you know, we just need this blood test. And she said, no, I won't spend healthcare dollars on your child.
And oh, wait, I've got to process that. The doctor said to you, I won't spend health care dollars on your child. As a physician and as a mother, I would have felt like I'd just been kicked in my stomach. I want to let our listeners know, we've kind of thrown some medical terms around here. Torticollis, as you mentioned, she'd had before, is a tightening in the neck. Correct?
Yes.
And the growth hormone that you're worried about needed to be tested is the hormone, obviously, that children need to grow everything, their brain, their body, their height, everything.
Yes.
And that's all you wanted to know is, why is this child not growing? And I want to know if she might need some help hormonally.
Yes. And the problem also with the growth hormone is it's not just the growing was not the issue to us. It was that it helps with your tone.
Exactly.
And she was low tone, and it also keeps your blood sugar up.
Yes.
And if you don't make enough and it drops low enough, then it causes seizures. And this was a child that was already at risk for seizures.
Yes. The growth hormone is kind of like the conductor of an orchestra. And you just wanted to make sure, you didn't care how tall your daughter was.
Absolutely.
It wasn't an aesthetic thing. You wanted to make sure that she had everything she needed to maximize growth of all of her organs, to keep her seizures at bay, and to just be a healthy kid.
I think the most important part of that is that with children with 4P minus, 85% have seizures. And
yes.
Some of them are major seizures. And that was our main interest, was to try and keep those seizures at bay.
Yes.
And that seemed to be our best way of doing that.
You know, and our approach to our daughter was that if she had symptoms, that she would be evaluated like any other child.
Yes.
And if she was missing something, yes, that we'd supplement
basic medical care.
So when she told me, no, I won't spend healthcare dollars on your child, I was really floored. And I said, I don't understand. I just need a blood test. These are my dollars and my insurance. I don't understand. And she interrupted me and she said, no, I want to make this perfectly clear. I will never spend a healthcare dollar on your child. And so at that point, Rex ended up calling about three more doctors. And finally, he talked to a doctor who said, well, of course, bring her up and let's evaluate her. And so we did take her to that physician and he ran the blood test and he called me. And I remember clearly it was on a Friday afternoon and he was so distressed to tell me that he couldn't get the growth hormone overnighted. We wouldn't be able to get it until Monday. And it was an emergency that she have it right away. He'd never seen a level this low.
Oh, boy.
And he actually, we had to make preparations for the weekend. We had to go get a little monitor so that we could test her blood sugar because he was concerned with this low of a level that her sugar would drop and she would seize.
Yes.
And so I remember thinking, this has taken us months to get someone to listen to us. And it's this much of an emergency that he's upset that we can't get it overnight.
So you got her the growth hormone.
Yes.
You got her squared away. And Abigail grows. And you ran into some other problems later on with surgeries that needed to be done. Can you just sort of bring us up to speed with what needed to be done as she got older?
When Abby was about a year old, she had her first seizure. It wasn't something that was unexpected. It was a major seizure. We took her into our local hospital. And one thing that's important is that we live about 3 hours away from the nearest major medical center. So we only had our one physician, our one pediatrician, who was also her NICU doctor. Abby wasn't doing well. She wasn't responding to the medicines. And this pediatrician pulled me outside of the emergency room and said, what do you want to do? And I looked at him and I said, I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
While your daughter's having a seizure, he pulls you out of the room and says, what do you want to do?
Yes.
And did you think you were living in the Twilight Zone?
I didn't know what to think. I mean, it was...
You are very patient people, I will tell you.
And I said, I'm not a doctor. And he said, well, we don't have to do anything. We can just let her die.
We can let her seize to death. Is that what,
yes.
what
yes.
he was saying?
She
yes.
was in status epilepticus.
And for parents who have never seen a child seize, it is a terrifying thing to witness. Your eyes roll back in your head, your face turns blue, your arms are shaking violently, and you look like you're having fits and you're dying. And it's a terrifying thing for a parent, and it's a terrifying thing for a physician to see. So to ask you a question like that when your child is in this extreme situation is poor medicine at best.
Well, and it was actually more scary because this was about a 6-pound child. At a year of age, maybe not quite 7 pounds, but
wow.
So I said, I need to get Dawn. And she came out.
Yeah, he got me and he told me, you know, the same thing. He said, we don't need to treat the seizure. We can just let her die. And I looked at him and I said, it's a seizure. It's her first seizure. Yeah. We knew there was an 85% chance that this child would have seizures. Let's mm-hmm. treat the seizure like we would in any other child.
Yeah. Seizures are not that hard to treat. We can interrupt them pretty quickly. It's a very simple medical maneuver in general.
Yes.
Is to treat a seizure.
I couldn't believe this was happening.
But again, we were thinking maybe this is an isolated incident. Maybe it's just because we live far away from a major city or major medical center. But we were both just dumbfounded with the whole situation.
You know, and the next thing that happened is when she was 5 years old, she needed to have a small, soft palate. Cleft palate repair. And it was yeah. to be a pretty simple procedure, go in one day and go home the next.
This is where you have a deformity in the roof of the mouth. And she needed that repaired. Was it interfering with her eating?
It actually wasn't. And that's why she was 5 years old before it was repaired. But she got to the point where she was big enough that they felt comfortable repairing it. And it was going to help with her eating. And it was also mm-hmm. going to help with her speech.
Mm-hmm. Paint us a picture of Abigail at 5 before the surgery. Does she speak?
She did not have words yet. She had what they call pre-speech.
Okay.
And she had said things like mama, but she mostly, it was more a singing type of verbalization.
Okay.
Mama, ba, ba, ba.
So she clearly knew her mom and her dad.
Yes.
And she knew her siblings. Was she affectionate in any way?
You know, Abby knew what was going on around her. You know, people would tell us, the doctors would say she doesn't understand anything, but the kids would tell a joke and she would laugh. They'd ask her questions and she'd shake her head appropriately. I remember one day distinctly when she was 3 years old and she was kind of leaning over her chair in a way that she shouldn't have been. And I said, Abby, sit up. And she popped right up. And we knew that she understood what was going on.
So is there any way you could tell at any point how much she was able to understand, take in? I think one of the things that parents and adults do is we look at children, and because they look to us like they don't understand, we assume they don't understand. And that's a huge mistake that we make. Tell us what you believe she knows. I mean, she knows love. She knows laughter. She knows instruction. And do you think she's happy? Was she happy at 5?
Oh, yes. She's always been a happy little girl. She could shake her head no, and she learned to shake her head yes, but she could clearly tell us no. We could be a room away and say, you know, it's time to feed Abby, and she might shake her head no because she didn't want to eat yet.
She didn't want to eat. Okay.
And so we knew those types of things, but she also loved music. Mm. And from a very early age, with the kind of the yes and no, we found out that she loved opera. Wasn't something we'd...
How could you tell she loved opera?
Because she would shake her head to the music. You would play some music, and then they'd play some other music, and she would tell which one she liked with the head shake. And we'd realize she liked opera.
Opera-loving toddler.
And
preschooler.
Yeah, she's very, and still is very specific about the songs she likes. The kids know exactly what her favorite songs are.
Can Abby walk?
She can walk. She's at this point with barely a pinky hold that she's almost walking by herself, and she loves to walk.
How old is Abby now?
She's now 10.
Okay.
And so we expect her to be walking within the next year or so.
Does she have any more words than mama and dada? Can she communicate to you at all?
She doesn't have words yet. But again, if we think about the syndrome as being one of significant delay, the words will come. And people that we know say the words will come as she continues to grow and continues to age. Mm-hmm. So we expect those to happen at some point.
Mm. Hannah, I want to turn to you for a second. This time has gone by so quickly, but I want our listeners to know you are sitting in the room, and we're going to talk to you tomorrow if you'll come back with us. But you're sitting there watching all of this. How old are you? Are you older than Abby or younger than Abby?
I was 8 when Abigail was born.
Okay. So you've taken all of this in from the time you were 8 years old until now. And we are running pretty short on our time now. We're going to have to close out for today. But I wondered, would you all be willing to come back and finish your remarkable story? Because we need to talk to you, Hannah, about the documentary you made about your little sister Abigail called Labeled. Would you be able to join us tomorrow?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Wow, I hate to cut into this program, but we are out of time for today. I'm Ryan Dobson, and I know that you will not want to miss the second half of this broadcast with the Allison family, which we'll play next time. The message needs to be heard and shared. It's just unbelievable that this is happening right here in the United States, and I know that you, as our listener, will want to know what you can do about it, which we'll talk about next time. If you'd like more information about the Allison family or their documentary titled Labeled, you can call us at 877-732-6825. And we have a link on our Facebook page and our website, drjamesdobson.org. You know, this program is a vivid reminder that there are so many people who have no regard for the lives of babies in the womb. The pediatricians and medical staff discussed on today's program are supposed to be here to protect and promote human life, and yet they are instead promoting the extermination of little lives. Put yourselves in their shoes and imagine what it would be like to hear a doctor tell you, I'm not going to spend one healthcare dollar on your daughter. Or what about the family who discovered that the hospital had already been starving their son for 2 days before they realized something wasn't right? What would you have done had you been in their situation? Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk is here to stand up for those babies and families and to promote the sanctity of human life. And that means fighting for the lives of all babies, including the ones with genetic disorders or abnormalities. You can help us stay on this mission by donating online at drjamesdobson.org, by calling us at 877-732-6825. You can also donate via the Family Talk smartphone app or by visiting our Facebook page. Thanks for joining us today, and again, we'll see you tomorrow for part 2 of Labeled, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.